Hello, I'm Rose Savage and welcome to the Follow Yourself Experiment, the podcast where we explore what it really means to follow your own unique path and build a life that feels true to you.
I am so excited to introduce you to Dani Binnington, a woman whose story is full of purpose, strength and heart. Dani is the founder of Menopause and Cancer, a non-profit organisation that supports people navigating treatment-induced menopause after cancer, a space that's often overlooked but so needed. Dani came to this work through her own experience of cancer, an experience that reshaped her life and ultimately led her to create the kind of support she wished had existed for herself and others going through the same thing. She's a patient advocate, yoga teacher, wellbeing expert, and the host of the Menopause and Cancer podcast, as well as the author of Navigating Menopause After Cancer. Her work is all about offering real support, practical tools, and creating open, honest conversations around menopause after cancer. Conversations that truly change lives.
But now I think it's maybe our superpower that we dare to change and we dare to go with our passions of what fuels us now.
Dani's story is such a beautiful example of what this podcast is all about. Following yourself, especially when the road looks different to what you might have expected. Finding a way to honour what matters most and turning lived experience into something meaningful and supportive for others. So if you're ready for a conversation about resilience, self-trust and building something beautiful from life's twists and turns, you're absolutely in the right place. Hello and welcome to the show, Dani Binnington.
Ah, what a lovely introduction. Thank you, Rose. It's so great to be here.
Oh, it's so great to have you. It's very easy to write, Dani. Your work and you are just like the most amazing thing. It really is so great to have you here today. You are an absolute hero of mine. As I said in the intro, your warmth is magnetic and something I've admired for such a long time. The communities you build, whether it's around yoga, cancer, menopause, or nutrition, are so real, grounded, and so incredibly authentic. I'd love to start by asking, where does this come from? And has that ability to bring people together in such an honest and supportive way always been a part of who you are?
Well, I can't remember really where it started, Rose, but I do think it's the only thing I'm really good at. Everything else, I'm sort of winging. I'm winging it daily, weekly, monthly, and I never really know quite what's going to happen next, but I seem to go with the flow. But to bring people together, to connect people, to just, I think have people around my kitchen table, maybe that's where it started, and then have people in a yoga studio and to create community and really to listen to what they've got to say. It's been great. I think initially I always thought I wanted to share something. So I wanted to share how I was eating and cooking, and I founded the Superfood Supper Club and I invited people to cook with me, and I wanted to share how and what I was eating. But actually, when everyone then sat around the kitchen table and they started to share what was going on for them, that was the most magical moment for me out of the whole event. And then as I was starting to teach yoga, again, I wanted to share a very transformative practice for myself and to share it with others. But the magical bit for me was then to watch people and watch them transform and watch them go on their own journey. And a little bit later, when I then set up my first Facebook group where I invited in cancer survivors and menopausal women, it was the same. I thought, let's do a bit of sharing. So it just moved from the kitchen table onto an online space and then later into a not-for-profit organization. I think it's all the same. It's just probably different outlets of it.
Yeah, but you do have this really wonderful way of connecting with people. I think you see everybody as an individual, and which is an amazing thing. I mean, we met when I was going through quite a hard time in my life, and we met actually across Instagram of all places. But I just felt that incredible heart and warmth from you. You know, I imagine for women going through cancer and facing the menopause to, you know, listening to your podcast, I know the kind of very personal connection they feel with you. Do you think that, as you say, comes from opening your kitchen table, opening your home? Mm. I mean, you sort of open yourself.
Mm. I always felt, well, you know nothing, Dani. I always thought it's best to not assume. It's best to not even try and think what might go on for someone else, because I always know I know nothing. And that gives me the curiosity into my everyday, into all of my work, into all of my meetings, to just really find out about what's going on for people. And then I can sort of come up maybe with a strategy behind closed doors or behind the scenes to try and support. And you really truly never know what's going on in anyone's life. People might think they've got it all together, and they might look like it's all plain sailing for them, and they might be really sad and going through something really difficult. And we always do learn, don't we? I mean, as soon as you think you know it all, you do know you probably you need to revisit that, because something else is around the corner that is going to challenge your belief system. And I also know, even when I thought I know it for myself, that was probably the times when I did myself the biggest injustice. Is it injustice or disjustice? Whatever it is, injustice. Anyway, you know what I mean.
It's injustice, but I'm not the person for words.
There you go. Because I kind of now know, unless I really, truly support myself with who I am right now, I'm not really going to support myself in the ways I need. Sometimes I get so stuck in, I think I know it all, I think I know what to do, but 5 months have gone past and I'm a different version now. Mm-hmm. And I might need something different. And so it's keeping that open mind for myself as well as for others has really helped me.
Yeah, you're incredibly curious in lots of things. I guess whether that be people or solutions or yeah, you have a curious mind, I suppose. So I'd love to go back a little bit, if that's okay. Can you tell us what life was like when you found out that you had cancer? I know you have three incredibly gorgeous girls who were very little at the time. What was happening in your world then, and how did that moment shift things for you?
I think personally, cancer was my second life shock. Up until then, I always felt I'm the really lucky one. I am so lucky. I grew up in a very lovely middle-class Austrian family with two really loving parents. And my little core family was very lucky, but around us, lots of difficult things happened. We lost a lot of people in our family. There was lots of death, tragic death. But I always felt like I escaped it. So I always felt very lucky. And when I was 19, I moved to London. I had a boyfriend. And again, I felt luck was on my side. Mm-hmm. I then met my husband. We had our first daughter. I just knew, you know, we fell pregnant very easily. Luck was on my side. Like, I was very close to very sad experiences and lives around us. But I always felt I escaped it. My first life shock that rattled those foundations was when my twins were born too early, and they were premature and they were tiny. And they were born to quite a difficult medical condition, and they were in intensive care for a long time. So we had them in hospital for a long time, and we didn't know if they're going to make it. And that was the first time that trauma was very close to home. It affected me myself rather than someone close to me. And when we thought we kind of recovered from that, our second life shock, as I call it, happened. And it's when I found my lump. By then, I knew that things could go wrong, because it was so touch and go with the children, with the babies. And it's not that I expected it, but I kind of thought, well, I know bad things can happen now, because I've seen it firsthand, and it's happened to us with the children. We were so lucky they survived. But then when cancer came along, it was just our second life shock. They were little. The twins were two. My eldest daughter was four. And like most other people, we just functioned. We did really well. We did everything we could to still have a good family life, to try and have a holiday. And it was the first time in my life where I really had to ask for help, even more help than when the babies were born. And now I think that's become my second superpower. So the first superpower being a great connector and really being curious and connecting people. But the second one is I hated having to ask for help. I did not want to have to ask for help, but I was getting chemotherapy and plenty of surgeries and the radiotherapy, and I was away at one point for over 2 weeks in hospital. And so I had to ask for help. As a family, we had to ask for help. And And I'm glad I did, because now I've become good for asking for help. And it's actually a really great attribute when you're running a business. And for our not-for-profit organization, I ask 5-6 people for help every single day. And these aren't even people inside of our organization. They're people outside. But I have become used to it. I've become good at it. I don't mind asking for help anymore. But it certainly wasn't easy when I really needed the help in the first place.
Yeah. What you're saying about asking for help then, I listened to one of your podcasts about your book that's soon to be published. And it was with Laura, the person who designed the cover. I mean, it's such a fabulous episode. It actually nearly had me in tears at one point. It was really, really lovely. But yeah, I mean, that's a great story of, you know, both building your community and asking for help. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the relationship that happened there?
And I'm really hoping, I've got my fingers and toes crossed that by the time your lovely listeners listen to this episode, that the book would be out.
Yeah.
So right now, it's not quite out yet, but it will be out then. And
very exciting.
I always knew I wanted to bring all of my work just into a book, and it just seemed the obvious thing. You know, I got to 177 weekly podcast episodes with 177 experts, world-renowned menopause experts and oncologists. We had written so many written resources. We delivered so many workshops. But everywhere I went, people still had the same questions, and I just couldn't get through people's questions. You know, I host workshops, and I still host a lot of workshops around kitchen tables at other charities. You know, it's the same. It's a different topic. It's a different sharing, but it's the same. It's a lovely deep connection. And it is, I really hope that when people walk away, they know a little bit more what they might want to do next. And often when people are stuck, whether that's in careers, whether that's in their healthcare, whatever it is, it's really hard to know what to do next or what the first step could be, right? And so I always hope that people walk away with, oh, I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to try this. It might not be what's right for them, but I will try this. But at every workshop I went to, people kept saying, and what about this? And what about that? And what about that? And I just couldn't get through all of those answers. And so I thought a book is a logical next step. But I had totally underestimated how much hard work it was going to be. Years ago, I had a publishing deal that fell through, that really robbed me of a lot of confidence. I had an agent, I had a book deal, it was amazing, and it fell flat. So to rewind something that had failed was really difficult for me. It took a lot of bravery, and I had to convince myself that I was good enough almost to do it, because, I don't know, that really knocked me sideways when the first book deal fell through. So much so that with this book, I never even tried to get an agent. I never even tried to get a publisher because I was so scared to get rejected. I still don't believe anyone would have picked it up because, you know, most people think that the menopause community who's had a cancer diagnosis is tiny. That's incorrect. There are millions of people suffering. But most people, it's hard to get that bigger picture. And so I didn't think I could cope with a rejection. And so I just did it by myself. And that was really difficult because obviously I have no Scooby-Doo about how to do anything. But again, I asked for a lot of help, and I reached out to people who are great editors and great book people, and they know what they're doing. And they've provided me with the help and the knowledge to now make it a really good book, I think. But yeah, no way could I have done anything like that on my own. So yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing. And you met Laura at one of your menopause and cancer retreats.
Yeah.
So through your community.
And we sat in a big hall. It was lovely. It was a big barn in a huge circle. There were 30 cancer survivors, and they were all between the ages of 25 and I would say 60. And their cancer treatment had put them all into the menopause. So chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery, hormone therapies. And often people don't talk about what comes after cancer. You know, everyone had been congratulated by their families a long time ago. Yay, well done. You've done active cancer treatment. But that menopause side effect can really knock people sideways even years after the active cancer treatment had finished. And so we sat in this big room, in this big circle. Again, it's kind of like round my kitchen table. It's nothing different. And we shared And I always said, I'm going to be honest throughout. And so I shared with them. I said, look, I've been on this crazy journey. I think when I'm about to publish, I will need your help. You'll need to buy the book on Amazon. You'll need to leave me a review. I've got no marketing team. I've got no PR team. I've got no budget for anything like that and no energy. By now, I've really run out of steam. So can you do me a favor and buy the book? And Laura came up and said, you know, I'm a book designer, but I'm sure it's all done and dusted because you're saying this will happen soon. And in traditional publishing, everything would have been done. And we've gone on this lovely journey together. And I've actually just come off a call with her. She's just delivered all of the final manuscript and everything. She's worked so hard and she's been so kind. And she wants this to be a really good book as well, because she's one of the readers. So it's truly become a book from the community for the community. And I pinch myself. Yeah, it's been amazing.
Yeah, that really came across in the podcast that I listened to as well. And actually how much working with you on the book had helped Laura through her own story with cancer. It was absolutely incredible. But I mean, Dani, your cancer diagnosis has changed the path of your life, because, you know, you say you kind of now ask people for help, and we've talked about your curiosity. But all the things that you're doing now, you've learned to do on your own. You know, even you're talking now about publishing a book, you're not doing it with the publishers, you're doing it on your own, and your podcast and your retreats that you do and your non-for-profit organisation. I mean, it's phenomenal. Before that, you were already talking about nutrition, you were building a community of yogis, all of these things. Your curiosity is unbelievable. Where does that come from?
You know, it's the curiosity that allowed me to go into all of those ways. But actually, only up until recently, I kind of also thought it was my biggest negative, because I kind of kept thinking I'm not doing anything properly. I remember when years ago you helped me with my amazing website. Can you remember?
I do.
And I was saying, I should just be a yoga teacher and just become a really good yoga teacher. And that's what I do. But then I was so passionate about eating well and fueling myself well, and eating well and nourishing myself really went hand in hand with moving and meditation and calming my overworked system. I couldn't let go of either, but for a long time I thought, well, that means you're not doing anything properly. You're a bit here and a bit there. People aren't going to know what they're going to buy into. Like, if I was going to create a brand, it was too much all over the place. And I actually remember a mum at the school run trying to introduce me to a teacher. And she said, oh, you should go to one of Dani's yoga classes. She's a bit of a jack of all trades. You could go into a supper club, a yoga class. And I was mortified, because I thought, that's not who I want to be. I want to be good at what I do. I want to be an expert. And it really didn't sit very well. But something in my personality, and because of my curiosity, and because I want to keep learning, and because I also had, I guess, the financial freedom as well, that I didn't have to do and stay in a 9-to-5 to just pay the bills, that definitely also allowed me to be curious and allowed me to move. And only now, I'm well into my 40s, have I met so many other women who've been on really weird careers, and hardly many careers are just very straightforward. And I recognize that this isn't unusual. I recognize that it's a bit higgledy-piggledy for most people. And I recognize that just to try and find my authentic way through this is also great. I'm glad I didn't get stuck in something I hated. I know I was very lucky. I didn't have to either. And I want to recognize that for myself and others listening, because not everyone has the possibility to change and maybe take those risks in the same way I did. But now I think it's maybe our superpower that we dare to change and we dare to go with our passions of what fuels us now, of what's bright now. Because we are these amazing chameleons, aren't we? We change. I feel like every 10 years is another almost like chapter of my life book. And how amazing that I can do different things.
Yeah, I think that's it exactly, isn't it? I know one of the things that's inspired me to be a coach is that growth, and just, you know, through my own kind of path, realizing that human beings have this never-ending growth and we can just tap into it. And it's amazing actually what can come from that.
Yeah. And I think I had to let go of my own expectations, but also what I thought others were expecting of me as well. And I think my own expectations were, I'm very critical of myself. I demand that I work very hard. I don't allow myself a lot of time off. I'm not one to sit on the sofa and watch the telly. So I have those almost internal demands that I should do well and I want to do well, whatever that is, you know, for different people, different success means different things. But I also always thought, well, how do others perceive me?
Yeah.
What are they going to think? Are they going to think everyone's a yoga teacher? Why is she suddenly a yoga teacher? Or are they, you know, and I had to let go of that and really sort of put the blinkers on a little bit. And that's really helped me. And sometimes when I have those doubts of when I think, oh, what are people going to think? I sort of just stick my fingers up to almost my own internal dialogue a little bit and go, well, get lost, you know?
Yeah, it's hard though, isn't it? Because I think as we go through life, we have all of these responsibilities that kind of bolt onto us. I think particularly as women and any mothers out there as well. But even that aside, we all do. And actually, trying to be your authentic self and let go of some of those responsibilities and put yourself first. And funnily enough, this came up again in the podcast that you spoke to with Laura. And she was sort of saying in that episode that it was actually when she felt she got ill that actually her sons became more empathetic and, you know, started having a different view of her. And you actually were talking about your mum as well, and there was an episode, there was something that happened with your mum that made you think, actually, when you talk to your children, you're going to talk about yourself in the eye a bit more.
Yeah, and I think it's also to be able to say to people and also to your children, I'm tired, I need respect, and I'm worthy of, I'm as worthy a person if I'm tired, if I'm angry, if I'm upset. I don't always need to be perfect and I don't always need to show up with full energy. And there are so many different layers to us, and to sort of get others to acknowledge it and to show up the way you are instead of pushing through all the time and pretending. What I would say, though, about people with a portfolio career or changing career, and maybe not everyone does it quite as often as maybe I have done, it's hard work as well, because often there is a time of an overlap where you do two things at the same time. You probably run two jobs at the same time. You might be in your day job. You might be training for something else. You've got lots more costs. You have more investment. I went through phases where I did a lot of counseling, and so that cost me money, but it really helped me to understand in which way I was moving and what was important to me then and how I should heal. But I think there are always times where it's actually hard work, where you're learning new skills, where you have no idea where you're going, where it's a big risk, where perhaps there is a financial outlay as well. And so I now always really appreciate when people have done something like that, because I recognize how hard it can be.
Yeah, it's an investment in yourself. It's time and money that you're investing in yourself, which we often find it very hard to do.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, also in your household, there's a lot of creativity. That's very clear. Like I get the sense from the Binnington household that there's like some real freedom and creativity. And yes, you've got a good idea, go for it kind of thing. Because obviously you mentioned Tim earlier, your lovely husband, Tim, also developed the Manta hairbrush. And that also came from you having cancer, because your scalp, you found the brushing your hair hard on your scalp. So he develops that. But tell us a little bit about that. And obviously there's a very exciting story that involves a certain den.
Oh my God, that was one of my worst days ever. So we went on Dragon's Den with Manta Hair, our hairbrush, I would say 7 years after it first launched. So there's been quite a long time until we went, or 5 years or something like that, onto the den. I can't say I enjoyed the experience, but we did get investment, but we did turn it down because they just asked for too much money in return. But when I lost my hair, I said to Tim, I'm going to stop brushing my hair as it grew back, because I felt I was just pulling more hair out than necessary. And he'd been a hairdresser all his life. And he said, I'm sure you need to brush your hair for your scalp health and for good regrowth, and I'm sure there's a better way, but there wasn't anything out there that was gentle and effective at the same time. And I wonder now whether it was his way of dealing with my cancer diagnosis as a dad to young children. He threw himself into it. And in all those early years, I worked part-time, I took a backseat, I was really sort of keeping the house together, and he was just off doing his thing. There was nothing stopping him. Mm-hmm. And it was definitely a very cathartic way for him to throw his energy into something positive that he could control. Because the worst thing for people who love someone with a cancer diagnosis is that you have no control over anything. Mm-hmm. And so he controlled this element, and it's been a wild ride for him, and it's been great. And he spent a lot of time in the States, and he launched it in Japan, and it's a worldwide brush, and it's Manta Hair, and you know, it's on Amazon and on our website, and it's been a really great experience. And again, it's cost him a lot of money to set it up. He needed to be really brave. He had no idea will it ever even pay him back his investment. And now it's hard work, because as soon as you become successful, as soon as you try to do something, you're going to work not a 9-to-5, Monday to Friday. It's going to be pretty much ongoing in your head, Monday to Sunday.
Yeah.
And so you always see it from all sides. You know, it's a great ride. It's really exciting. And at the same time, it's hard work, and you just need to show up for it every day. And I think that's what it takes for most things, isn't it? I think it's an illusion to think I'm going to do something great. I'm really enjoying, maybe change my career, and I spend 2 hours a week on it. I think that's the illusion. And I think that's where a lot of people don't succeed, maybe, in whatever success means for them, is things will get hard and it will get tough, and the joy will sort of leave them, you know, the motivation will dwindle. And it's going through, pushing through those times, that is, I think, the key.
Yeah.
The key to keep going. Yeah.
Yeah. Keep going and show up for it every day. I love that.
Just keep going. Yeah. Yeah. Just keep going. Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Danny, I mean, thank you so much for joining me today. You are an absolute beacon of light and positivity. Your story reminds us that even in the toughest of times, we can still follow our own path. Even if it looks different to what we expected, it proves that when we listen to ourselves, the unexpected can be incredibly beautiful and powerful. It's been such a privilege to share this conversation. Is there anything before we finish today that you'd like to leave the listeners with if they're thinking about taking that leap and following their own path?
It's such a privilege to be able to have ideas and to go for it. It is such a privilege, because I've met so many people along the way who were far too young when, you know, cancer took them, and they are no longer here, and they would have done anything to exercise. They all, and many of them say, I'd do anything to go for another run. I'd do anything to have another meal. So to even go above and beyond, to be able to dream up a new career or a new way of working, is the biggest privilege, because you see that there is a future for you. And I think there were many years where I didn't see my future because I was worried there wasn't going to be a future. I couldn't see beyond the next month or the next scan. Mm. And so I always know it's my biggest privilege when I can plan an event for next February, because that is 6 months away. I know I've won the lottery, because I truly then believe I'm going to be around long enough to go and turn up to the blooming event. And so, yeah, I think it comes from a place of privilege, and it takes a lot of hard work. And so buckle up, everyone, and tie your laces and and enjoy the wild ride.
I mean, what an amazing note to finish on, like, enjoy the wild ride. That's absolutely amazing. Thank you so much, Danny. And to everyone listening, if Danny's story has inspired you and touched your heart, please share this episode with someone who might need a little encouragement to follow their own unique path. Life may take us on our detours we never expected, but it's still our journey to shape, one full of meaning, empowerment, and joy. Until next time, keep trusting your own path and embracing the beautiful, messy experiment it is life. Thanks for being here with us and the Follow Your Own Experiment. I'll see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Follow Yourself Experiment. If you enjoyed it, share it with someone who needs a little nudge to follow their own direction, and I'll see you next time.